As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Hello and welcome to an elimination edition of the Forum Club podcast. No Bill Orem. Jovan Buha is in the building, and the Lakers, for the first time in, I guess, the Davis-LeBron era, face an elimination game. Down 3-2, coming back home to Staples for Game 6 with the unknown status of AD still kind of lingering in the air. Take it wherever you want, Jovan, but what are your initial thoughts as the Lakers try to save their season in the first round?
It's just, how did we get here? That's kind of like my big picture approach. And I think we've gone back and forth all season because I think that there's been the warning signs, right? Like Bill and I had that story a few weeks ago where we kind of laid out how things have gone wrong and how, following that Raptors loss with LeBron, I think it was the second game back from the ankle sprain, how it just kind of looked like the season was falling apart and this team was not going to win a championship. And they, to their credit, have rallied from that point. You know, they entered the playoffs on a 6-game win streak. They had a 2-1 series lead after game 3. But, I mean, it's just been all the issues that have been there all season have kind of reared their head in the last couple of games. It's been injuries to starters and key players. It's been the offensive stagnation and poor shooting, turnovers. It's been, Frank Vogel not knowing who to turn to in the rotation. I mean, he played 11 guys through the first three quarters and changed the starting lineup to start the second half and benched Andre Drummond for the first time this season in terms of, starting a half. So I just, the desperation that they had, kind of in that second half, it was just a bit jarring to see really having no idea, no idea what their identity was, no idea who to play, who to trust. And I just think, the breadcrumbs have been there all season. And I think because this was a championship team, because this was a LeBron James team, we're kind of willing to look past certain things, but this is not, if we were judging the season objectively and just by this season and not constantly bringing in last season, I think this is kind of who the Lakers have been all year. And, at the same time, they could still rally and win this series. I would not be shocked, but it's not looking great. And, it felt like a breakthrough moment for Phoenix confidence-wise where the Lakers just looked shook. I mean, I just buried the supporting cast in my story that should be up soon with breakdowns of guys just passing up wide open shots and being in their head clearly and not being confident. Whereas Phoenix, it's like, it feels like their confidence couldn't be higher right now. And again, the Lakers might come out, win game 6 and push it to 7. But with the way Phoenix has played at home and the way the Lakers have played on the road this series, I don't know if you can have confidence that even if Anthony Davis is back, like who can you really rely on right now besides LeBron and AD? Because I don't know. And I think that's kind of the biggest question for the Lakers right now.
So we should talk kind of like micro, like in the moment, how do they survive this series? And then I think, there should definitely be a larger discussion on the macro. What could this mean if they do get eliminated? Because I think they face some big time roster questions entering the offseason. But you mentioned that's who they are right now. It's who the Lakers have shown to be this season. I mean, they're a bad offensive team. They were what, 24th, I believe they finished in offensive rating. And even if you look at LeBron and Davis's minutes when LeBron was on the floor, they were, basically the equivalent of like the 15th best offense in the league. Davis somewhere around that same number. So even with their megastars on the floor, they just, in an era where everybody's scoring at an absurd efficiency rate, they're just not. And then you look in this series, I mean, they had like an 85 offensive rating last night. In their other two losses, it was like 94, 97, something like that. It's 100 for the series, for a five-game series against, this is not like some unbelievable defensive team. I mean, this is, a well-built defensive team. Kind of got a pest point guard, Chris Paul, although he's not himself in this series. Booker is a bigger wing. I think he's better than probably his reputation defensively, but, I mean, he's exploitable. Mikal Bridges, solid, maybe like all defensive second team type possibilities. Ayton, big young center, but like, I'm talking about a guy you could target at times too. I mean, he's gotten a lot better. And then Jay Crowder, good, sturdy vet. But like, this is not some, 2004 Pistons defense out there. And the Lakers just can't score at all. They're scoring worse than the Thunder, which was the 30th ranked offense this season. You kind of laid out some of the reasons for that. I mean, you look all around at the supporting cast. I think LeBron, number one, LeBron hasn't scored more than what, 25 in a game this series.
Since he returned from his ankle sprain, he has not scored more than 25.
Yeah. I mean, in playoff games like the one last night, even if the Lakers lost, that in the past would have been a LeBron like 42, 13, 10 performance, right? Like throw it all out there, and maybe they lose by 7 anyways, but that just doesn't seem to be in the tank right now. And if that's not in the tank, if Davis is hobbled or not there at all, if Dennis Schroeder, who we can get to, I mean, 0-9 scoreless in what has spiraled into like a train wreck situation for him just financially, probably. I mean, what did he turn down? What was it, 4 for 80 or something?
484.
Again, that's maybe if we talk more like macro questions moving forward. But then, all the fringe guys aren't shooting threes. I mean, they're 30% as a team, I think second worst in the playoffs. KCP's not himself. Clearly, certainly not what he was in the bubble. A lot of the stuff that happened in the bubble playoffs, a little bit unsustainable from a shooting perspective. That has regressed, beyond the mean. And it's just a bad situation where they just cannot score enough against a Phoenix team that, is an okay defense. I think they finished sixth in defense this season, but they just can't score.
I think to your point on the defense, Phoenix is looking great defensively because the Lakers can't shoot. And if you just take an average possession in this series, look at where Phoenix's five defenders are. Everybody is near the paint or has 1 foot in the paint. And it's just an average possession. Phoenix does not care about the Lakers shooting. They do not respect it. And that is... there's clips have gone on Lakers Twitter and stuff of showing like, LeBron runs a pick and roll and look at where Phoenix's five guys are. They're all in the paint. They just don't care. And the Lakers are shooting 30.2% on threes in this series. They actually just had their best performance, in game five, coincidentally, but it was 34%, still below league average. And it's just, they can't make shots. And I know we're keeping this in more of a micro short-term perspective, but if I'm Rob Pelinka, like I really need to, like, the Lakers over the last two seasons, clearly kind of favored defense, especially last season, and this year's this season they tilted it more towards offense, bringing in Dennis, Trez, Mark was supposed to help with shooting and passing. Wes was a 40% three-point shooter the last few years, so like they did try to address some of the offensive concerns from last season. But they need to address the shooting because they do not have a guy that Phoenix cares about. And it's, it's honestly amazing LeBron's even able to score 25 points because, he's doing it all on jump shots. And clearly his, his legs aren't fully there. His jumper isn't fully there. He did have, I think, what, 4 or 5 threes last night. But it's still like, I mean, the average Lakers possession is swing, swing, swing. a lot of west to east actions, no north to south. And when they are getting into the paint, it's getting blocked. You know, sometimes they're drawing fouls, but you know, how many drives, Dennis had that one drive on Mikal Bridges, he gets swatted because there's three Suns around him in the paint. And it's just, it's, you know, I think they're making Phoenix look a lot better just because they can't exploit them. And we've seen, like, you know, I felt when they are hitting their threes, Phoenix has to come out, and then that's when the drive, and you saw that towards the end of game four, where Marc Gasol hits a couple threes, all of a sudden LeBron could go downhill, Dennis can go downhill, and that's when they had that run in game four to cut it to single digits. But and that's why I think there's a case to be made that Marc Gasol should be starting at this point and playing more. And you saw that in the second half, Frank benched Andre Drummond, and maybe that's an adjustment for game six, because the Lakers need the floor space with some semblance of shooting to have any shot, I think, to score to keep up with Phoenix, because right now they just can't generate enough offense.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Okay, before we get to what this summer could look like, in the immediate, you know, they got to win two in a row. This is not a like unbelievable task. Beat the Suns twice in a row. They've done it in this series, right? And it was, they won game two on the road. They won game three at home. They just kind of got to flip that. Win game six at home. Win game seven on the road. Like if they do get six, like Phoenix will be tight in game seven, and there's no one more experienced than a LeBron James in game seven. And also should be mentioned, Chris Paul is dealing with the shoulder thing again. You know, that looked just like the game one injury. And then he spent game two and game three like barely being able to dribble and pass and like afraid to shoot his mid-ranger. It seemed to loosen in game four and game five. But if he has another week of this same like weakened arm, like, you know, you might have a very compromised Chris Paul in game six and seven, and that makes Phoenix very vulnerable. So let's talk Davis quickly. Like, it, you know, I know LeBron's talking last night, like, you know, he's attacking it like Davis won't be there. Do you get the vibe that there's like pessimism that Davis will even be able to play?
I mean, yeah, like you said, LeBron said that he's not expecting him to play. I did think it was interesting that the whole, I think there's some gamesmanship to it last night where, you know, pregame Frank said AD wasn't ruled out. And then he had the two instances in which he came out, you know, pregame and was testing it out on the floor. But obviously, you know, wasn't able to go. And you saw some of those clips and he was in pain, clearly just doing lateral movement. So, I don't know what the read is on AD. You know, I do think they've sounded pessimistic. So I think, you know, you kind of take that for what it's worth. But if the fact that they ruled him out day to day, I mean, I do wonder if this, I guess, what, three and a half days off is enough to recover. I mean, this grade one groin strain technically takes 1 to 2 weeks of recovery. So theoretically, AD should be out the rest of this series and potentially even into the next series if they somehow advance. So I'm not sure, but I do think that he's so important. And you really saw, you know, I wrote about it. I tweeted out the on-off numbers. They were not pretty for AD. And I think my argument was more so, not that they're better without AD because they're not, but I was just saying, look, up to this point in the series, they've been able to survive without AD on the floor and they've technically been better. And I don't think that's like a you know, a macro kind of takeaway, but I just felt, you know, they could win the LeBron minutes. It was, do they not win the non-LeBron minutes? And they ended up getting destroyed in both, so it didn't really matter. But I think, you know, AD, if he doesn't play, I think they're done. You know, I don't see how they win game six without him. Again, I didn't see anything offensively that you could take away positively from game five. And I think if I'm Phoenix, I'm just loading up on LeBron and letting guys shoot. And maybe the Lakers have a good shooting night. Maybe they hit 15 plus threes and that's the recipe to winning. But barring that, I just don't think they have enough juice offensively to, you know, score 100 plus, 105 plus against this defense, especially when they're just packing the paint like that.
Yeah. I think rotationally, do you think, I mean, he starts the second half with Gasol and Caruso on the floor. Do you think he, in a desperation situation, do you think he's shown his hand? Like that's the lineup he wants to go down with?
I think so, just because he closed
assuming
game four.
Assuming no Davis.
Yeah, I mean, he closed game four with Gasol. You know, we were having conversations a few weeks ago of like, why is Mark not in the rotation? And you know, can you really trust a Drummond-Trez center rotation? And that has flipped, obviously. You know, Mark surpassed Trez towards the end of the regular season. Then they kind of had a timeshare the last couple games, and Trez played over him in the play-in game. But since then, Mark has eclipsed him. He's clearly become not only the backup center, but really the primary center, outplaying Drummond minutes-wise the last couple of games. Well, you know, he got fouled, got some pretty ticky-tack fouls, I will say, in that last game that I felt were a little unfair. But I think Mark is the more trusted option, I think, clearly. I just think politically, there clearly is some stuff with Drummond where the Lakers want to continue to start him, that they want to maintain his confidence. And I think ultimately that just might preserve his spot in the starting lineup. ESPN reported that. I don't see, one, how it really makes sense for either side, and two, like, financially.
If he wants the minimum, maybe.
I mean, I guess they'd give him the full mid-level, but I think if you're the Lakers, you're probably going to have to spend that on a Dennis replacement, honestly, at this point.
Well, what's he going to get?
Or another 3-and-D wing.
Let's get into the summer in a second. Just, you know, in the right now. I mean, with this three-point shooting, you know, they were 35% in the bubble last season, you know, by the end, over the whole course of the playoffs, which isn't unbelievable, but it's obviously significantly better than they are sitting right now. KCP made 45 threes in the playoffs last season. He's 1 of 13 right now. You know, Caruso actually, you know, I can remember hitting some big threes in those playoffs. Davis obviously was hot, and at this point, you know, even when he's been in there, the jumper hasn't been what it was. What in your mind, like, if let's assume either hobble Davis or no Davis, how are we sitting here Thursday night talking about how the Lakers pulled off a win? Is it guys like KCP just look a little spryer and hit four threes and kind of loosen up the defense a little bit? Maybe Gasol has a nice night. Maybe Drummond gives them a boost. I mean, Schroeder obviously has to be better. 0-9, near 0 points, but maybe like a 22-point Schroeder night. Like, what's the formula?
I think they're going to have to make their threes. Again, if AD plays, I think it's a different conversation where you can have LeBron and AD go for 55, 60 plus and win that way. But this series, for the most part, has been a rock fight. And I felt at some point Phoenix was due for a good shooting night. That, I guess, kind of happened in game five. I mean, they didn't even shoot the ball that well. I think had it been more competitive, maybe they would have shot the ball better, just because basically the entire second half was garbage time. But I think for the Lakers to win this without AD, it has to be the supporting cast, you know, and that's what I wrote after game four. Like, I mean, as you said earlier in the pod, like, even if LeBron had 40 last night, they still lose this game probably by 15 or 20. Like, this was, I mean, it was just not competitive at all. And I actually thought the Lakers defense wasn't that bad. Phoenix made, I mean, Devin Booker was hitting everything. He had 18 first quarter points. Campaign came in and it was hitting everything. And some of that was them being able to shake free on the perimeter, expose the Lakers bigs in the pick and roll. But I actually thought, I saw some people criticizing the Lakers effort. I didn't think it was an effort thing. I thought it was just, they executed poorly offensively and it compounded and the game snowballed and got away from them. And I mean, it was an 8-point game at the beginning of the second quarter. And by the end of the quarter, it was a 30-point game. So it was really that second quarter there. But for me, it's got to be the shooting.
Yeah, I mean, the Suns have won games in the series scoring 99 points, 100 points, and then last night, 115. But they won by 30 points by only scoring 115. You know, I think the Blazers lost last night, scoring like 146 or something like that. But it just, you know, it's 2021 in the NBA. Like, you know, if you're scoring 90, 92, 85, 95, and 109, or I guess I'd say 109 in both their wins. I think 109 is probably a good number, right? That's that's the Lakers' points in their two wins in this series. Like, that's the type of game they need to win. Because their defense, I still trust their defense, even without AD. But yeah, it's offense, it's shooting. What you're mentioning.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
Personally, I would start Gasol. I just think, you know, Drummond for, I think he's actually played, you know, reasonably well this series. We've discussed that on last week's pod, but it's just got to be shooting. You got to space the floor. You know, I'd go smaller, maybe start Wes. We don't know. The thing is, we don't know KCP status either. I think KCP is another big piece of this where, you know, he, even though he's not shot the ball well, he is, if you watch on film, one of the few guys Phoenix kind of respects. And that's really the thing is like Caruso, they don't respect. Kuzma, they don't respect. LeBron and Dennis, they don't respect. They go under them on the pick and roll. So it's like, you got to find guys who are going to hit shots. And that's where Frank has even turned to Ben McLemore, but you know, he hasn't really made that much of an impact. And then defensively, he's one guy that Phoenix clearly targets. So I don't know. It's got to be Wes. It's got to be, and Dennis has to play better. Dennis has to play a lot better. He can't put up a goose egg. So I don't know. I mean, for me, it's just the offense in making shots. And I know that's kind of simplistic, but it's just if the Lakers make their shots, which I think they are due for a good shooting night, they can win this game. If they don't, I think Phoenix wins again and they're sent home packing and have a lot of questions to kind of suss through over the next couple months.
Well, let's kind of talk about that. You know, like what's on the line for the Lakers right now? You know, they if they come back and win these two games, you know, they should face and Davis gets back, you know, and you know, maybe that gives Davis a little time to rest, particularly because Denver, Portland might be going seven. They have what I would consider a pretty soft second round opponent. You know, either Denver, who's not playing any defense without Murray, with a very bad backcourt, or Portland, who had the 29th ranked defense in basketball this season. I just don't consider a contender. So, you know, you win these two games, like, you could convince me once again that the Lakers could win the title. But you lose one of these two games, I mean, you face waves of questions, like, throughout the roster heading into the summer. Is the first one to use Schroeder? I mean, like, it's a really bad season, contract season. The Lakers trade the, you know, their first rounder plus Danny Green, who, you know, say plenty about Danny Green, and he certainly wasn't the creative playmaker that Schroeder can be, but, you know, he probably would have hit more threes than Dennis Schroeder's hitting this series. And it's weird to look at, you know, Dennis Schroeder shot, like, I think 39% from three for the Thunder last season. He's, you know, really kind of bumped his catch and shoot numbers up. And I think he's, what, down like 33% this year, obviously not hitting him that well in this series. In one way, you would think he has the leverage entering the summer where the Lakers traded valuable assets and kind of committed to him, like having his bird rights. And, you know, as they enter kind of, you know, increasing salary issues, they kind of have to bring him back. But at the same time, it went so poorly. And like, I don't know what his market value is. What would his situation look like if they just lose on Thursday night?
I think it's tough to bring him back, or at least at the price point that he's asking for. Like, I already didn't like the 4-year, $84 million offer. To me, Dennis, for most of the season, I viewed him as like a $16 to $18 million a year guy. Like, to me, he's a back-end starting point guard. He's somewhere in that, you know, if you're ranking every starting point guard in the league, he's somewhere in that 21 to 30 range and potentially could make more sense as a sixth man, which is, I think, initially the way the Lakers viewed him or partially viewed him. And that was a conversation they were having. And then he came out publicly and put that pressure on them saying he wanted to start and he was tired of coming off the bench. So, I think he has kind of carried himself in an interesting way where he's, you know, he put that pressure on them from day one. He's openly talked about his contract. He openly talked about being shopped at the trade deadline and how that pissed him off and made him reevaluate his future in LA. So,
which, by the way, that one I completely agree with him on. You know, like if you're getting publicly shopped at the deadline for Kyle Lowry, and if all the reporting says like you're very much on the table and the only, you know, swing factor here in this Kyle Lowry deal is Talen Horton-Tucker, like I would feel a type of way about that. So, you know, like blame is kind of on the Lakers on that side too.
Yeah, no, for sure. I'm just saying more so like his strategy has been applying pressure on the Lakers publicly all season. Like this has been really from his first media availability, like he's been doing this. And I think it kind of worked because he got what he wanted as being the full-time starter and not being this, you know, basically the sixth man. But I think it's just tough to, like, for me, it comes down to, you know, I think he's actually had a solid season. He helped the Lakers during that stretch when LeBron and AD were out. You know, he didn't start the stretch off well, but he eventually found a good groove and I thought was playing his best basketball of the season. But when it comes down to it, he's not a good three-point shooter. I think, to your point, when you look at his career, you know, year-by-year game logs, or I mean, just seasons, like, that was an outlier. Last season was an outlier in terms of shooting. He is a career 34% three-point shooter and has only been above that mark twice in eight seasons. So I don't think it's – you got to pencil him in as a below-average three-point shooter. And I think on a team that is predicated around LeBron and AD, you need shooting. And you know, it's hard to put a point guard out there. And for as much was made about playoff Rondo and how much he impacted the team, a key reason for that was he shot, what, like 40% in the playoffs on threes, like or close to that. So, like, you know, playoff Rondo isn't as impactful if he's not making his threes. And Dennis has been the opposite, where he's regressed as a shooter in the playoffs versus improving. He's shooting 30% in the series. He shot 33.5% during the regular season. So he's actually regressed, not gotten better. And I just think it's the shooting is questionable. And so is the decision-making. Like, how many times do we see Dennis not find the big on a roll in the pick and roll and fling up some floater or get blocked or something? And you're like, that wasn't the correct read. Or he tries to, you know, carelessly shovel a pass through traffic and it gets intercepted. And I think those are my two biggest knocks on Dennis. Like, defensively, he's been solid. He's impressed me. He's better than I thought he was. He's had some big games, but he's not been consistent. He's not a good shooter. And he leaves a lot to be desired in terms of his pass shot decision-making. So with those three things in mind, I just don't see how you can justify paying him more than like 15, 16 million. And he clearly wants more than that. He's going to want to start. And I just don't know if it's the best fit long-term.
Yeah. I mean, the only, you know, he may have played himself out of that type of, you know, 20 million something range.
Yeah.
I mean, and it probably will be a free agency that's decided, you know, once the market gets there, and you only need one desperate team. It's a little bit like what the Warriors are dealing with Kelly Oubre. But, you know, the other, you know, I kind of mentioned that trade that the Lakers declined to do at the deadline, or, you know, add Talen Horton-Tucker into it. I mean, Talen Horton-Tucker's been pretty much a non-factor in this series. Draymond Green's on TNT last night saying, like, that is the answer for the Lakers. Play Talen Horton-Tucker more. They need more of that kind of playmaking. I do think that's somewhat of a clutch-related comment from Draymond. But, number one, do you think he should have a larger role in the series? Or two, do you just, like, you know, do you generally think he's kind of been a disappointment this season? I mean, what are you shooting, the 20% somewhere from three? And do you look back on the deadline and think that was it's going to loom as a pretty large mistake for the Lakers not pulling the trigger, you know, Schroeder, Horton Tucker, basically for Lowry?
Yeah, I think so. And I said at the time I was pro Kyle Lowry trade. I did think it was a lot to give up. And my concern was just at that time, I think I felt it was tough to trust the Lakers replacing that KCP role, especially, and he's been their best 3-and-D wing by far all season, right? He shot 41% on threes, and you know, clearly is a good multi-positional defender who can guard point guards, can guard wings, or smaller wings. So I just looked at the replacements of, like, Alex Caruso. You know, actually shot the ball well this season, but on a very low volume. So, you know, as a higher volume guy, you don't have as much confidence in Alex. Kuz is not a shooting guard. Wes Matthews shot 31% on threes in the regular season. So, like, you didn't trust him as a shooter and kind of had a down year overall. So I just was looking at that as, like, yes, you're going to get a massive upgrade from Dennis to Kyle, but you're losing a long-term piece in THT and really another long-term piece in KCP, who's been your best 3-and-D wing up to this point. But, I mean, look at it this way. KCP, Dennis, and Talen last night combined for 11 points on 4 of 19 shooting. I think Kyle Lowry would have given them something better than that. And It's not that straightforward, but I do think with the way Wes has come on in the latter portion of the season, you probably could have slid him in at that starting shooting guard spot, played just a lot of Caruso. I mean, basically would have been Wes and Caruso entirely at the two. I mean, you would have lost Talen again, but you got Ben McLemore, who's given them some things at times. Like, I mean, yes, you would have taken the depth hit, but Kyle Lowry, I think more than anything, would have just organized the offense in a way that they have not been able to, in a way, frankly, Dennis hasn't been able to. And I think that's one of the other things is like, okay, Dennis goes 0-for-9, 0-for-4 from three, whatever, you know, bad shooting night. That happens. But he had one assist, and he had three assists the game before. Like, he's just not creating offensively. And it's like, if you're not scoring, go get 6, 7, 8 assists. Do something out there. But he's just doing nothing offensively. And I think looking back at it now, I mean, KCP's been injured, so that's a factor. But I do think the Lakers would be in a better position with Kyle Lowry, no doubt.
And we all missed out on a Kyle Lowry-Chris Paul wrestling match by game 3, I would say.
You see, that would have been great.
Yeah. I guess, you know, Kyle Lowry had the same injury that Paul had, where he, like, kind of cranked his neck back. Whiplash is what the Raptors referred to it as. And he kind of had this dead right arm for a little while. And apparently Paul and Lowry have been, like, in contact about it. I thought it was interesting. Yeah, you know, there's always give and take to some of this stuff, too. Like, Talen Horton-Tucker having a disappointing season has obviously not been where they were hoping he was heading at this young stage of his career. But at the same time, he becomes a lot more affordable to them this summer. You know, remember there was talk of, like, could somebody throw the Tyler Johnson max sheet at him? You know, we were having discussions like that a few months ago. Now, I mean, I assume they should probably get him back pretty reasonably. But at the same time, I think there's less optimism about where this might be heading for Talen Horton-Tucker. Beyond that, what do you feel like is on the line in the next 4 days?
Well, I think they have a lot of. I'm gonna just put this out there. I don't think Frank Vogel is gonna be on the hot seat. I've already seen some of Lakers' Twitter go down that road. Like, he just won a championship last season. I think he has the built-in excuses of LeBron and AD missed 63 combined games in the regular season. They're coming off the shortest offseason in NBA history, and AD just missed a pivotal game 5 and potentially could miss a pivotal game 6. So
this,
I think there are
roster
some
roster than coaching too, it feels like.
I think so too. I do think that, yeah, like I do wonder, in like some alternate universe, they don't sign Andre Drummond. What does this series look like if you're going with Mark for 25 minutes, Trez for 10 to 12 minutes, and AD for the remaining, AD or Keefe for the remaining, and maybe Keefe takes the Trez minutes and he's kind of the backup 5, but because you don't really, like you can get away with Keefe, I think, against Kaminsky or Saric at the 5, but like, what does that version of the Lakers look like? Because Drummond, you know, technically had, I think, the best counting numbers through the first three quarters. I'm not counting the fourth quarter because that just doesn't really count, in my opinion. It's 7 points and 13 rebounds. But upon rewatching the film, like, he was getting torched defensively. And he just blew so many assignments, was late on his rotations. And really, like, the Lakers kept talking about sense of urgency after the game, and we just didn't have a sense of urgency. Like, Andre Drummond, to me, was the guy who stood out on film of, like, he just did not have a sense of urgency defensively, and really was just, I thought, had a pretty poor defensive game. So I do wonder, like, what this would have looked like had they just not signed Andre Drummond and just rolled with Gasol, Harrell, Davis, Morris as their center rotation. Because I do think there's a chance they might have been in a better spot. But anyway, I think it's really just like, what, you know, first it's Dennis. I think after that, it's Alex, who's going to be coveted. I think Alex has once again shown he can be a valuable bench contributor for basically any contender.
They got to bring him back.
They got to bring him back. I think they're going to bring back him and Talen. And then, but you have other decisions where Drummond is a free agent. You know, do they legitimately want to bring him back? Is he willing to come back on that, you know, I guess, full taxpayer mid-level, which is going to be, what, 9.5?
I think it would be like 5-6 range.
Oh, sorry. The
taxpayer.
Yeah, you're right. Then the taxpayer.
I cover a team who has for many years had to use the taxpayer mid level.
You have a PhD in the luxury tax. So, I mean, then what do you do with Montrezl Harrell? Because I don't know if you, I don't think you could bring back Drummond, Harrell, and Gasol. And
well, they have Harrell an issue has a player, with Montrezl Harrell. Player option Harrell, for $9 million. Is he option. Getting more than that? Is he like, he's probably picking that up at this point. Is he? I don't know. I mean, like,
I think he can get that somewhere else.
Remember the Charlotte rumblings last offseason? Like, man, he, you know, you pick and roll partner him with LaMelo Ball and just like, you know, the dregs of the Eastern Conference regular season. Like, he's scoring a bunch of points and helping them. Now, is he helping Charlotte win a playoff series? I think we have continued to see no, but... $9 million.
Like, I don't see him getting more than that. I think that that's his ceiling. But I think some team will talk themselves into him. I mean, because you can still sell it on, like, you know, per his per minute per possession numbers are basically the same that they've been the last three seasons. Like, he kind of is who he is. He's going to help you in the regular. I mean, he did help the Lakers this season. I mean, he clearly isn't a postseason player, but in the regular season, he can give you 20 and 8 on any given night and help you beat a Charlotte on a random Tuesday night when you don't have the juice. So, like, Trez, I think, is still a valuable regular season player and is still a guy who can be an elite backup in the regular season. But if you're trying to win a championship, like, I do think there's a limitation to his role in your rotation. So that's just something you got to think about. But, you know, going to a Charlotte who needs center help or going to, you know, I don't know, Detroit or something like that. Like, I could see that. But yeah, I mean, I think for the Lakers, for me, it's the shooting. They need to bring in another shooter, if not another couple shooters. And maybe that's upgrading on Dennis, not in terms of like an overall player, but getting a better point guard that is a better shooter and can kind of space the floor around LeBron and AD. Because that to me is the biggest thing. Like, you know, and it worked. As you said, they shot 35% on threes last postseason, which isn't even great, but is, you know, decent, respectable. This year at 30%, it's only one series, and maybe if they advance, they'll end up shooting better. But I mean, the shooting has just been atrocious, and it's really been jarring to see how little the Suns respect them.
Yeah. Beyond that, I mean, like, Davis needs to get healthy this summer. LeBron, yeah, obviously, like, he needs to treat that high ankle strain, probably take a large chunk of rest off before the Space Jam media tour I'm sure he's gonna go on. And I like, the short off season clearly got to Davis physically this summer, and I think he just kind of needs to have a good, like, healthy, you know, rejuvenated summer. But we probably shouldn't talk too much about the summer. They just have to win two straight games again. Is there any final thoughts you have going into six and what can be done?
Yeah, I mean, I think we've seen it at times in the last couple of weeks where with their backs against the wall, we've seen who Frank really trusts. And it's been interesting because, you know, as an example of this, like, he did shift to Gasol towards the end of the season. But then in the play-in game and in game one, he gave Trez the opening crack at being the backup. And then that didn't work in either instance, and he ended up turning to Gasol in the second half of the play-in game and then turned to Gasol in game two and has maintained that as the backup. I think my thing I'm looking for in game six for the Lakers is that sense of desperation, and with their season on the line, Frank really going to what has worked and what he trusts and believes can work, because I think there has been somewhat of a dichotomy between the initial approach from the Lakers and then when, you know, their back's against the wall, he turns to other things. And that, to me, I think Mark is kind of the poster for that, because when the Lakers have been very desperate, they've gone to either AD at the five or Mark at the five. It hasn't been Drummond at the five. It hasn't been Trez at the five. So I don't get why Frank continues to roll out Drummond as the starter or has gone to Trez as the primary backup at times, right? So for me, it's like, this is your season. You have 48 minutes. You got to roll with your best eight guys. You got to roll with your best four or five lineups. And, you know, politics don't matter. Personality and ego don't matter. It's about advancing and preserving your season. And to me, that's what I'm most interested in, because I mean, everybody talked about it. The guys we talked to after the game all talked about, we didn't have a sense of urgency. You know, I thought Markieff Morris, if I don't know if his availability is up somewhere on YouTube, but anyone listening to this should go watch it, because Keith had some amazing insight on this team. And he was like, this has been here all season. We have not played desperate. We have not played like a team that's hungry for a championship. And, you thought you'd see that in game five, but you didn't. So I think for me, it's the combination of finally seeing a desperate Lakers team with their season on the line, and Frank coaching that way as well, in terms of going with the players and rotations that he truly believes should be playing, because I don't think he's always done that. And I do think there's politics involved. I do think there's some extra stuff involved, but if you want to roll with Andre Drummond for 15, 20 minutes, your season could be over. So that to me is what I'm looking for.
Yeah, I'd say I'm looking at LeBron. You know, again, as we've talked about on this podcast, a 45-12-10 doesn't guarantee a win, particularly if Davis isn't there. But does he have that? You know, can he have one? Can he have a throwback type performance? And, you know, I'm really just talking about throwing it back about 7 months. I'm not expecting 29-year-old LeBron, but even 36-year-old LeBron. Is that there? Or I think you'll know early on if he kind of gets the sense that this thing is dying and he can't save it. Then his mind may already be kind of shifting into like getting right for next season and not pushing it hard on a high ankle sprain to try to prolong a playoffs if he doesn't believe like this team just has title capabilities. But if he still does, kind of like he did in the second half against the Warriors, you know, does he have that type of gas in the tank right now or not? And I think you will know early on. So that's what I'm looking for. Jovan, I appreciate it. Either a Game 6 recap, Game 7 preview podcast is probably next coming on the Forum Club feeds, or some off-season, like, deeper dives into what comes next. So a lot on the line Thursday night for the Lakers, and we will talk to you later.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.